This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. We have for you an investment trust, investment company special today. I am here with the wonderful, the brilliant, the fantastic Annabel Brodie-Smith, the Communications Director of the Association of Investment Companies. And of course, I'm here with my co-host, the brilliant Henry Viola Hare. Annabel, hello and welcome back. You've come back for more with Henry and I. So we're absolutely thrilled to have you. You know, you were a huge fan of yours and a huge fan of the AIC. So we're absolutely thrilled to have you on the show again.
I am delighted to be here, Peter. I was thinking about saying when you said I've come back for more, well, I am a glutton for punishment, but I always enjoy talking to you. And there's lots to talk about at the moment.
There most certainly is. Henry, what your thoughts are regarding Annabel coming back?
Oh, fantastic, Annabel. I mean, I absolutely loved your first appearance on our show. You're so eloquent and you're so knowledgeable about investment trusts. It just puts me and Peter to absolute shame, really. I've been following with great interest all your commentary around the Saba saga. That's a bit of a tongue twister.
Absolutely.
So I'm curious to dive into that in a bit more detail, and always, of course, to sharpen the axe on my favorite topic of DGI9, which continues to rumble on in the background.
Really wish you had invested in that one, Henry. I really wish.
Exactly.
You
that makes two of us.
Right, so Annabel, I'm going to say, unlike I do in many of these interviews, over to you. Where do you want to start with this? We're a year in almost with the Saba saga.
We've got to talk about Saba. I mean, clearly there's a huge amount going on right now. We knew last Friday the Edinburgh Worldwide Board announced that they had not got their tender offer through. Saba and two institutions had made up enough votes to stop it going through.
Okay.
So that was that. Then we had Saba's response saying they wouldn't favour any further tender offer from the current board, and they were putting forward their own tender offer. Then the board came back. This is just one trust. Then the board came back. No, we've got an AGM date on the 30th of April. On that date, our directors are going to be up for re-election. Saba have nominated their directors, their three directors, up for election. And the board are insisting that people vote for them and vote against the Saba-nominated three. Otherwise, that trust will be under Saba's control. The Saba directors would take it over. And, you know, Saba have said they're going to offer tender offers, one immediately, one after the SpaceX IPO. But they've also been very clear. Their intention is to appoint Saba Capital as the manager and change the remit of the trust completely to a trust that invests in other trusts, which is not what shareholders voted for. So we're coming up to a very crucial vote on that company. And then we also have a similar situation underway at Impact's Environmental Markets, where we've got a vote and a result on their tender offer happening on the 16th of April.
Today, yeah.
So, you know, this is going on at this time. I mean, we've got to remember, with Edinburgh Worldwide, with Impacts, the shareholders have come out and voted twice for Edinburgh Worldwide against their proposals from Saba. They voted against Saba's proposals, supporting the board, wanting Baillie Gifford to continue to manage their global smaller companies investment trusts with, you know, with a big holding in SpaceX. That's what they've wanted. But Saba has consistently come back at them and again put forward and nominated these three Saba directors. I have to say, I call them the Saba Stooges. That's probably not very charitable. I don't know whether they're independent, but they're clearly nominated by Saba. So
Absolutely.
that makes me a little bit cynical, quite honestly, particularly when Saba have said their intention is to manage the trust. You know, if they
Exactly.
do appoint Saba as manager, how can they be independent?
Absolutely. The thing that I'm really intrigued by is the fact that Edible Worldwide have their remit, and Saba wants to completely change that remit to go and do something completely different. Now, as a large body of shareholders, we've voted against that twice now and won. Why are we still going through this with them?
Well,
How much do they need to have that blocking vote?
it's not on, is it really, that they're allowed to keep coming back with what is effectively the same proposition. Now, we are very concerned about this, as you can imagine, and we want to stop
Course.
this. So we have been lobbying the FCA on the listing rules. The good news is the FCA have now said they are going to review the listing rules because, you know, for example, that issue about director independence is very important. We've said that the current listing rules need to strengthen director independence. We've also said, you know, you've got a very serious potential conflict of interest here. You've got directors coming in, nominated by a 30%, still a minority shareholder, but a very significant shareholder, and then potentially appointing that shareholder to manage the trust. Clearly, that's a conflict of interest. Clearly, that needs addressing. You know, we've got a material policy change here. Potentially, this trust is going to be changed from a global smaller companies trust to a trust invested in other investment trusts. Is it fair that that substantial shareholder can vote on that policy change? You know, there are lots of issues here. Now, the good news is that the FCA are going to be amending the listing rules, but the bad news is that's probably going to take to the end of this year,
Ouch. Okay.
which means currently these trusts are vulnerable. And Saba, as I said, you know, we would need a record turnout at this AGM on the 30th of April, and if anyone is watching who's Edinburgh Worldwide shareholder, I have to say, please, please vote. This is so important. We would need a record turnout, something like 75% turnout, if the Saba and the two institutions that voted against the tender offer voted in the same way again.
Right.
It seems to me, Annabelle, that there's sort of a
like you say, a bit of a structural issue here for holders of investment trusts. Do you think that this is something that's unique to investment trusts, or does it affect other investment vehicles more broadly?
Do you know what? I think the issue with investment trusts is that you've got a shareholder who could also become a manager.
Right.
And the relationship, if you look at how the listing rules work, there are lots of listing rules which very much address the relationship between the independent board of directors and the fund manager. And you don't have that in other listed companies. You don't have that special relationship. Of course, if you have an open-ended fund, you have some trustees, and a couple of them are independent, but you are effectively investing in a vehicle that is run by the manager and owned by the manager. So it is a very different structure. Now, clearly, we think the independent board of directors is a very important, you know, you've got them to look after your interests, you've got them to campaign on charges, reduce charges, you know, you've got that independent body there,
Providing they are
but
independent.
they are independent, which is why we need these listing rules changed, because clearly this cannot continue in this way. I mean, another issue, and we've talked about this, I know again and again, is about voting. The platforms are not obliged to pass on voting forms, voting obligation, rights to their customers. Now, the good news is that most of the platforms have been absolutely brilliant on this, and we are urging the platforms to write to their customers, notify them about this vote. This is not a normal AGM. This is an AGM which could completely change the direction of this company. But, we still don't have it legally obliged that they have to pass on that information to vote. I mean, that is just not good enough.
Or the way that they, I mean, I've got to give a shout out to AJ Bell here, who are my main broker. They are very good at making me aware when there are votes, and I have a right to a say over how a company is managed or investment trust is managed. They are generally very good. I would say, and this isn't something that's particular to investment trusts, but the way in which proposals are often worded can be confusing for retail investors. And unless somebody is listening to this episode with yourself actually explaining who these directors are, probably all they will see on the motion is, do you vote these three new directors on the board? And they won't actually understand the implications of what they're being told.
I mean, you are quite right, Henry, because do you know what? I'm going to hands up. I'm a shareholder in this, okay? Edinburgh Worldwide, I'm a shareholder. I bought out into it in 2024. I bought into it at the time. I thought interest rates were coming down. Turned out they were being staying higher for longer, they're a bit long. You know how it goes with investment, that's where it goes. But, hands up, I am a shareholder. And I can tell you that if you look at the voting form, you have to follow the board's recommendation because you have to vote for, because there's all the independent board directors listed that you have to vote for, and a few other things as well. And at the end, there are the three Sava directors that you have to vote against. And you're quite right, that's not straightforward.
It's utterly baffling. And I think this is something where actually clear communication from places like the AIC is just so critical. And you get it with IPOs as well. I mean, IPOs and secondary listings, people will put prospectuses out and they're hundreds of pages long, full of legalese. And actually, they're totally baffling to the average investor.
I know, and as a result, nobody reads them.
Exactly.
I mean,
Exactly.
they're produced for the lawyers. They make the lawyers lots of money, but quite honestly, nobody reads them. We've actually had a little bit of a victory because our investment trust can now issue up to 50% of share capital without issuing a prospectus.
Okay.
Because if you could go and buy it on the market, you could go and buy the share, it's existing, they're issuing new shares, but it's a company that's already out there existing. Why do you have to produce a prospectus? You have to produce a prospectus because the lawyers like it. Makes some people lots of money. But
Exactly.
actually, we've actually won through on that one, so that's really great news.
Good.
But, as I said, in fact, to be fair to Baillie Gifford, I think they've tried to make it as simple as they possibly can. But it does involve a bit of understanding, to understand, you have to follow the board to vote on this voting form. And, it's not acceptable. I mean, you can imagine our chairman are very concerned. This is a trust which has got a huge percentage of retail investors. The last vote they had on the tender offer, 68% of those shareholders voted. So, there was huge amounts of publicity about this. There's still a lot of people who are missing it completely. Okay, and their voice are not going to be heard. And unfortunately, they might wake up one day and find them in a complete themselves in a completely different vehicle than what they invested in.
Originally invested in. So
Yeah.
Annabelle, it's been going on for nearly a year now ish,
Sure.
right? How many investment trusts and the investment companies have been impacted by this Saba activism? And would you go so far as to say that the majority of this has been detrimental to the retail and institutional investors that wanted the vehicle to be,
Well, to be honest,
conducted
Peter,
in?
the initial attack was seven investment trusts. Initially seven. Then they've obviously come back for Edinburgh. So, that's within the first seven. Then Impact, so that's eight. But the thing I think we all have to acknowledge is that Saba do have positions in around 30
Around
investment
30.
trusts. Yeah. Now, Clearly, some of those positions are pretty small. We're talking sort of 5% or so. But some of them, like Edinburgh Worldwide, where they have a 30% shareholding, there's a couple that are significantly large positions. Now, some of your viewers, and I'm, they might think that Saba, they might well say, well, Saba's come in, they have shaken up this industry. And it's made boards think about delivering for their shareholders. And I would say to that, actually, I think that process, fair play. Saba have clearly sharpened boards' thinking. But to be fair to be boards to our boards, they were this process was already underway before Saba came along. If you think about it, since interest rates went up, investment trust board directors have been looking at how they can do for their shareholders, whether it's share buybacks, whether it's mergers, whether it's liquidations, whether some have been acquired. Last year we had 27 deals of this nature, and we had record share buybacks of £10 billion. But that was underway before Saba came along. I think if Saba have done any good, I think they have. Focus, I mean, before we were talking about shareholders voting, no one was interested. Suddenly, there's been a lot of focus on shareholder voting. I also think that it has brought the industry together. If you think about it, it's not just boards, it's not just managers, it is shareholders, it's been big institutional shareholders have come out in support of trusts, wealth managers, brokers, analysts, associations like ShareSoc, a whole body of people, proxy agencies have been recommended to vote with the board, whole body of people have come out to support investment trusts. And I think that demonstrates just how much shareholders value their trust, which is a good thing. But I think generally, yes, Saba's activity overall, particularly, let's be clear, this is not about activism. I think activism definitely can be a force for good, definitely. But this is not about narrowing discounts or realizing value. This is about Saba ignoring other shareholders' views and getting control of their investment trust. And that cannot be good.
I asked this question a few weeks ago to an individual. I won't mention the name on here, but essentially I was asking what is Saba actually trying to do? Because they have the vehicle that they've already got across in the US. They have the purse strings to do it. All of these other companies, investment companies, have gone through the rigor to actually list over a course of 2 years or less, list, build up the investment trust, build up the trust in what they're doing, in the integrity. And now, after 30 years, 25 years of running this trust, Saba are coming saying, we just want to take over all the good work that you've done. Why don't they list their own vehicle and build their own investment trust instead?
I think that's a very good question, Peter. I think that's what they should be doing. They should be listing their own vehicle. They've got an ETF they've listed. They've got an ETF, which is in the intention is to invest in other investment trusts. But why don't Saba? Why don't they, if they want these trusts, why don't they buy the shares and make an offer? Make a proper offer.
Absolutely.
They are.
Absolutely.
Then people can, then the board can consider that. Shareholders consider that. It's like a takeover by the back door, would be my
Yeah,
description
stealth.
of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Can I ask you this, another question I wanted to ask you, Annabelle, regarding
Sure,
this, right? And
sure.
you've already answered some of it. I'm just going to just try and probe a bit deeper. Prior to this Saba activism, antagonism,
Yeah.
backdoor sort of issue kicking off, you and the AIC were very proactive in encouraging investment companies and vehicles to communicate more with institutional investors and retail investors. Now,
Absolutely.
some of those took you and took your advice and began doing so. Some of them were less so. Now more of them are doing so. What part of what's happened in the past year are you most proud about? You touched on it, some of the resilience that some of the investment companies have shown, and also the fact that they're now being more collaborative with each other. They're actually communicating with each other a lot more. And I think a lot of that started 3 or 4 years ago when you were put in position to say, look, ladies and gents, we need to be more proactive regarding what
I
we're
mean,
doing.
I'm delighted because I think the shareholder engagement for a lot of our trusts has improved. And that
Absolutely.
has got to be incredibly positive. And now they're going out to events, they're going on webinars, they're communicating, they're sending newsletters, they are talking to all their shareholders, not just the institutions, but the retail investors are a real priority for them. And I think we've got to feel proud about that. And I do think there
Absolutely.
is much greater collaboration within the industry. You know, we at the ASC, we introduced the Investment Company Showcase, our big
Yes.
private investor event, which will be coming up again in October. And we did that because we really wanted an opportunity for ordinary investors to come along and ask questions of their fund managers and meet their fund managers. And, you know, have that proper engagement. The managers love it. They always say they learn probably more from the private investors at that event than they do the institutions.
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing Podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
Brilliant. Love that. No, I love that reply. Henry, sitting there quietly, mate.
I am.
You.
It's mainly because I agree with everything you're saying, Annabelle. I mean, the issue around communication, I think so many investment trusts, it's not just investment trusts, it's investment relations departments generally, they just get woefully wrong. I mean, there's a tiny small cap I've been trying to research for the last 6 months. And I say trying because they put out so little material that you're basically reduced to the annual report, the half annual report, and the occasional interview. Now, from a retail point of view, retail investors are hungry. You know, the average listener to this podcast will be reading not only things like, Investors Chronicle and Shares Magazine from AJ Bell, but they'll be consuming material on the AIC. They'll be looking at Citywire Elite companies. They almost can't get enough information. And it's such a shame that it's taken so long, I think, for firms to get behind this idea that actually the more information you put out, the more retail investors will engage with you because generally they'll be more loyal. Institutions, if you don't perform as an investment trust for a quarter or two, I imagine an institution's dropped you, instantly. Whereas a retail investor, generally speaking, I think if you go through a tough time, like with Saba, yeah, your retail investors will back you if they understand your thinking, if they know what you're doing as Baillie Gifford and why. Yeah, they'll back you to keep going. And so, is there anything that the AIC is doing that institutions could access to learn more about how to talk to retail?
I mean, we do. There's a couple of things I want to pick you up on what you said there. And one of the things is, you see, for investment trusts, it's very difficult because they don't necessarily have the con. It sounds daft, but they don't necessarily have the emails or contact details of their shareholders. If you think about that, the shares are held through a nominee. So, say we're
Nominee
all on
accounts.
platforms here, the nominee has the shares. The investment trust can form a section to find out and their representative rights to all their shareholders. They can get a name and address, and then they have to write. Can you imagine that's expensive? That's a lot of stamps. Write to all of these shareholders to try and get them to sign up for their communication. So that's one thing. Again, we've been talking about shareholder voting, but that's one thing we want addressed again in legislation so that they are obliged to hand over, as well as an address and a name, an email address, as long as shareholders want it, you know, because that would make it so much more cost effective, so much easier to communicate. I mean, then the other issue is, You were saying we don't have anything for institutions. We do talk to institutions very regularly. We have a investor forum here at the AIC, which includes big institutional investors, some pension funds, but also some wealth managers too. And we talk to them regularly. But what our role has been on this to improve the communication is to educate and inform our board directors as to how they can do a better job. So we will do webinars with them, we will produce guides for them to help them understand how they can do a better job communicating with their shareholders. And these sessions are, of course, part of it. But in this digital day and age, isn't it ridiculous that
Sending
somebody is
letters.
still
Oh,
sending
if
letters?
they even make it, how long does it take?
It's ridiculous. Then you get the letter. Of course, you have to get out your phone and scan the QR code, and then you get online. But I mean,
I
it's a
imagine most go
ridiculous
straight from
process.
the mailbox into the bin, sadly.
Yeah, it's a ridiculous process. And really, regulation on this needs to keep up and move on. It's very important.
Yeah,
I think
absolutely.
in this digital age, Annabelle, I think you're spot on in things that can be improved and expedite matters and make and empower everybody to get access.
Go
And
on.
I think accessibility is going to be a major topic going forward for you, yourselves, and all these investment trusts that want to remain resilient, I think is the word we've got to keep re reiterating here, and independent as well, to do the things that they set the remits to do decades ago. Now,
Well, I
can I
can
talk?
assure you, Peter, we are going to be lobbying very hard to get this changed.
Absolutely. And we'll
And,
be supporting you as best
thank
we
you
can with
very
that as
much.
well. Right, let's talk about something much more positive, Annabelle. Throughout the X amount of years now, you've been talking about the usually successful companies that have been delivering for shareholders over the long term. And you coined, I'm not sure if it was you personally, but I'm sure it probably was, coined the phrase of dividend heroes. Can we talk about some of those strong, resilient companies that have been actually delivering the goods for institutions and retail investors, please?
Yeah, we definitely can, Peter. And I've got to say, the dividend heroes, and actually it's me and my colleague, Gemma Jackson. Gemma actually came
Okie
up with the word dividend hero, but I came up with the concept. And the concept is, and if you think why we did this, we originated this in 2009, right
Wow, okay.
after the financial crisis. And can you imagine what was happening to companies' dividends? They were being slashed.
But yep.
Slashed. It was a very tough time for income
Very tough time.
seekers.
Henry was born
And
by then, by the way. Henry was alive.
the reason we came up with the idea of dividend heroes is that investment trusts do have this really unique structure which allows them to retain some of the income they receive from their investment companies every year, up to 15% they can retain, hold it in their revenue reserve. When times get tough, like 2009, they can use those revenue reserves to boost their dividends. And that's why they have these very long track records of rising dividends. And the Dividend Hero Investment Trusts are the 20 investment trusts that have increased their dividend every year for more than 20 years. And I have to say, there are 10 investment trusts that have
Okey-dokey.
increased their dividend every year for more than 50 years. And this, we've
Fantastic.
got coming up a very exciting year, actually, because City of London Investment Trust, managed by Job Curtis, who is an absolute stalwart manager, excellent, excellent manager, is about to hopefully this year announce its 60th year
Wow.
of
Amazing.
rising dividends. So I think there will be some celebrating, I really hope so, when that is announced. As one of those dividend heroes, and as I said, there are 20 trusts, and they are from a range of sectors. It's not just UK equity income, it's global equity income, it's global smaller companies, UK smaller companies. There's a real selection of sectors. In addition to that, we also have 30 investment trusts which have been increasing their dividend for more than 10 years. So in addition, as I said, 50 trusts with dividend increases for more than 10 years and 20 of those for more than 20 years. And quite honestly, this is a big benefit for investors who are
Lovely.
income seekers who really, many of us relying on those dividends come in, boost our lifestyle. This is something that they find incredibly reassuring.
I love that, Annabelle. I mean, the work that the AIC has done to highlight these dividend heroes is so valuable. I mean, a lot of our listeners love dividends from individual companies, and actually, we've spoken multiple times about how risky that can be, falling into these dividend yield traps. I'm a bit curious, though. If you were an income-focused investor, and you were looking at building an income-focused portfolio with a basket of investment trusts, would you consider dividend heroes to be something that you could just go out and buy a selection of dividend heroes and that would give you reasonable diversification? Or are there other types of investment trusts that you might also consider?
There are definitely other types of investment trusts you should consider. I'm going to answer that question. I'm just going to say that if you are an income seeker, we actually developed something on our website called Income Finder. And we developed that because people want to spread they want to know when these dividends are coming in, when they're going to be paid, so that they can spread it out throughout the year so that all their income isn't just coming in a couple of months. So if you go onto our website, you can go to Income Finder. You do have to create an account, but then you can get all this very useful information and spread your dividend income over the year. And we set that up because people wanted it. People were telling us that this is how they use an investment trust. Now, clearly, the dividend heroes and the next generation dividends are some of the trusts. We have a real advantage when it comes to paying income. We've talked about this structure advantage. I mean, another one of our advantages is our suitability for investing in real assets, so things like infrastructure, property, renewable energy. Those sort of hard to reach liquid assets. Now, I have to say, I've been watching, and I'm sure we all have, what's been happening with these private credit funds in the US.
Oh, yes.
Because it's not a pretty story there, quite honestly. They are open-ended type funds. They have
Vehicles, yeah.
limited redemption. And they have not, it has not been working well. And a lot of them have been gated,
Gated,
or the
yep.
redemptions have been restricted. The thing with investment trusts is you have a fixed pool of capital which the manager manages. So they know that if people come in and sell, we buy and sell shares on the stock exchange. So they know that if people come in and sell shares, it's not going to affect that fixed pool of capital. And they can take a long-term view of their portfolio and they can invest for the best investments and they will not be forced to sell them when times are tough and there are redemptions. And that's what makes them so suitable for these types of assets. I have to say, it also makes them very suitable for unquoted companies. And for smaller companies, those which are less liquid, less easy to trade. But there is a whole host of other companies other than the dividend heroes. We list all the dividend yields on our site. We also list the dividend growth. I like to look at the dividend growth. We
Yeah.
might be investing in something, it depends what you want. You
What
might be
yeah.
investing in something that has got perhaps less bigger yield now, but it's growing very swiftly. You've got to think about what's suitable, what to meet your needs and your portfolio. But we have all of those listed on the site.
Yeah. What I love about the groupings that you've got and the top 15-ish of the dividend heroes, Annabelle, is the fact that as you said, they're ranging from 59 years up, all the way down to 20 years. But a lot of those dividend heroes are not the largest of dividend yields. And I think some income seekers often get traps or are seeking the higher yielding investment trust. Whereas I've always, and Henry's been advocating the same, is to be seeking the ones that are ones that are growing the income and consistently paying the income rather than just going immediately for the highest paying yield. And I think that's more constructive regarding the dividend
Ivan,
here,
I
is
love to
being
look
able
at
to do it
that
consistently.
5-year dividend growth figure. And just
Ah,
thinking about that,
okay.
I like to look at that 5-year dividend growth figure because that tells me that. Also, I mean, it's up to you. You want high yields, we can deliver high yields. We all know that high yields, there's more risk, clearly. That's the way it goes. If you're delivering a ridiculously high yield, you're taking more investment risk.
Risk to do so, yeah.
And we can deliver those, but then we can also deliver, dividend heroes that are
Consistency.
producing capital returns and income and consistency. And as I said, it's really up to you. You've got to think about what's right for your portfolio and what's going to meet your needs.
Brilliant. Now we're going to, that's a fantastic segue straight onto your portfolio, what you've been buying, because I know you eat your own
Oh,
cooking as well
yes.
at home
I
and also at
really do.
AIC, Annabelle. So
Oh, mainly my husband does the cooking at home, I've got to be honest. I don't eat my own cooking. I do a little bit, obviously, but he's the best. He's the chef.
Right. Okie dokie. Okay. So tell us about your portfolio. What you
Sure.
bought historically still holds long term. Any
Yeah, I
recent
mean,
buys, given all the activism and all the stuff that's going on, any
yeah,
recent buys?
well, I mean, as you know, Peter, I hold my portfolio. I've got portfolio. I did count them the other day. It's about 19 investment trusts.
Okay, I think that's lower than last time we spoke. So that's you've got a concern.
I've just got a couple of speculative
Ah,
companies.
okay.
Just a, I've got one. I've got a couple of speculative investment trusts.
Okay.
I've got one non-investment trust out of the whole lot.
Ooh,
One.
okay.
Okay, and that was I'll tell you what it is, I don't mind.
Okay,
I
go
took
for it.
a the only one I that's not an investment trust is Burberry. And I
Ooh.
invested in Burberry because A, I would like to say I have some interest and knowledge in fashion. So a hobby of mine.
Agreed.
Secondly, I thought it was, I mean, it was, I bought it at a very good time. I mean, everyone knows it was looking like it was going to be takeover target. And their strategy of going more and more expensive, and they were going into handbags and whatever, it wasn't working. No, it wasn't working. And obviously they've now brought in the new chief exec, and they've gone back to being sort of the British brand, which focuses on outerwear, Max, their bread and butter. Now, I'm sure, I have to be honest, I haven't looked too hard at my Burberry shares just recently because I know they're going to be having a tough time. Because if anything, we all know that, this conflict has, things like luxury goods, travel, tourism, certain types of retail are going to be impacted. But that's why it was a little speculative position, and I did it because I felt that it was right for turnaround. And I'm pleased to say it did.
Okay.
Not everything goes well, I can be honest about that.
Not for any of
Not
us. Yeah,
everything
absolutely.
goes well. So, for example, out of my portfolio, as I said, I made a decision. I thought interest rates were coming down. In fact, the reality was they were staying higher for longer. I invested in a couple of renewables, Foresight Environmental Infrastructure and the Renewable Infrastructure Group. I can say they are still under the water for me.
I am super skeptical on the renewables. I sold a lot of mine, but I sold all of mine recently. I feel like most of us as retail investors are missing something with them because the share prices originally created as interest rates went up, and everybody said, "Well, look, it's an inverse reaction. It's like a bond price, right?" The only problem was when interest rates started to come down, they kept falling, and the
It
NAVs
is.
kept falling. And so I sort of went, well, I can't quite figure out what's causing this, so I'm better off out of it altogether. Do you have much of a view on the
You've come
renewable?
out altogether. Oh, I've got a view. Obviously, I've got a view.
Hoping they're doing well if you've got some, I hope.
I've got a view. I mean, 2024, I went in. They have had, I would say, a perfect storm. Quite honestly, you're right. Obviously, Rates going up was, pretty disastrous for them.
Kryptonite for
Because,
them, yeah.
cash and bonds were, obviously, a better bet and, less risky and all the rest of it. In addition to that, they've had cost disclosure has been detrimental for them. Actually, we've sorted that one out. That's good news. A good tick for that one. On the regulatory side on that one, we've now sorted that out. That will be coming through in years to come. So that's good. But also, they've had issues with the subsidy regime.
Yeah.
That was changed from RPI to CPI. Then let's be honest, it is incredibly complex to price and predict energy prices. Incredibly complex.
And
And we
got
can
more
see that.
complex.
If,
It's a, it's
yeah.
a, it's a, it's
But see,
hugely difficult. I mean, and
it's hugely difficult. And
they
my view
also don't
is
tend to sell, they don't sell a product like Burberry, for example. So Burberry,
no.
factory in China or wherever, they manufacture their Macs, they ship their Macs, they put them in the shop, and either you buy them or you don't buy them.
Yeah,
It,
yeah.
it's somewhat easy to understand that business model,
Yeah.
with a few caveats on that. The energy market's entirely different, though. I mean, you've got a regulator that's setting the price, you've got the national grid that's charging for the connection, you've got forward energy prices that are done on a global basis. And then you're also impacted by the prices of comparable energy sources. So it's not just what solar and wind is priced at, it's also what the gas market's doing. So you're right, there's a lot of complexity there.
It's incredibly complex. And, maybe if I'd understood how complex it was, would I have invested? I don't know. Maybe I would have done. Because, me, I am a contrarian. And, I've got in at, I didn't invest when they were very, very popular. So I have got in at a better time. I've specifically invested in very diversified trusts. So they're investing in solar, they're investing in wind, they're investing in battery storage. The Foresight one has got all sorts of exciting things, including a fish farm and hydroelectric. And I quite like that, actually.
Yeah,
I
that's
quite like it.
diversified. Yeah.
It's very, very diversified. And, let's be clear, these things have got about a 10% yield. I mean, that is a big old yield.
Yeah.
Being paid, which I am happily reinvesting. They have got some benefits. Now, obviously, we've got, again, to add into this complexity, we've got the conflict now.
Yes, we have. Yeah.
Energy prices again, and one would think again some interest in the UK being less dependent on imported energy, imported oil and gas. Particularly gas. So I'm happy to hold them.
But
I've got
only.
those
Well, I think
yields.
that's the thing that, I mean, Peter and I have had no end of debates about, contrarian investing. And arguably, it's the right way to do it. Buying things when they're popular, actually, you're
Yeah.
buying high and you end up selling low. You want to do this the other way around. You want to buy low and sell high. And
I
so,
should. Yeah.
I think you're spot on there.
So I am, and I can tell you that things I did buy at that same time, I've already talked about Edinburgh Worldwide, but for example, Tritax Big Box.
Ah, yes, yeah,
It's a
yes.
fascinating company. I love it. Invest in these big, huge warehouses. They are enormous. I've even been to one. I was at a Tritax Big Box park. It's called Symmetry Park near Oxfordshire. I was there on Christmas Eve with my husband, who volunteers for the food bank of the Oxford Food Hub, and Ocado
Fantastic.
very generously donated 17 vans worth of food that
Blimey.
day. And
Fantastic.
I took a couple of them back and forth and back and forth.
Fantastic, yeah.
But it's fascinating. They're also investing in data centers now.
Yep.
And it's just gone into the FTSE 100. So,
And I think, am I right in saying that BlackRock took a stake as well, either last
BlackRock
year
took a
or the year
stake.
before?
BlackRock took a stake, a healthy thing when BlackRock actually takes a stake in investment trusts. They normally just take them over.
Yes.
It was actually a very healthy. And my other one, which I bought at the same time, which I'm extremely happy with, is Cordiant Digital Infrastructure.
Ah, yes.
which is, invests in sort of the plumbing of the internet, the cables, the data masks, very fascinating. Data centers as well, right, in Europe. Fascinating, and in the US, a fascinating company. And interestingly, that was listed on the specialist market segment. It is now going, just proposed to go onto the FTSE, into the main market.
Main market.
And
It's
it's
brilliant.
going to go on to the main market. I have to vote for that very shortly. And it will probably go into the FTSE 250.
Yeah, and then all the
So,
institutions will have to
and
start buying
obviously
that as well.
that's great.
Yeah,
There'll
it's
be
positive.
trackers buying it, more people buying it. So, I'm talking about my alternative bits of my portfolio here, but some of these have worked out really well for me.
Certainly.
Of course, you know me, Peter. I've still got my tried and tested, my Allianz Technology Trust, managed by
Of
Mike
course.
Seidenberg. Love that company. I've just had a lot of success with Aberdeen Asia Focus, obviously emerging markets. It was sort of plodding along and then it suddenly started to fly. That's the sort of thing I like to see. I've still got HG Capital Trust. It's had a horrible time recently.
It
Horrible.
has had a dip. Can I ask you about
Horrible.
that one in
Oh, yes,
particular,
there's a lot
Annabelle?
to talk about that one.
Because there was a lot, there was it was such a well-loved sort of trust, and it seems to have just got almost hit a little bit of a wall and gone out of favor a little bit.
It's
Is
totally
was
gone
it
out of
just a bit too
favor.
much exposure to one side of it of the portfolio or
It
what?
is about its exposure to software as a service.
It
It
all
is
the SaaS companies within the
entirely,
portfolio. Right.
it is entirely reliant on that, because that is pretty much
Right.
what HG Capital invests in. That is pretty much what they
Yep.
invest in. Clearly,
Yep.
we had this information that this AI with
Absolutely.
this legal was going to just do everything.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I have to be honest, clearly it's had some impact on the valuations, but I feel we've thrown out the baby with the bathwater on this one.
We've discussed it a few
Overreaction.
times. We're in agreement with you. Yeah.
Overreaction on this. HG has still got some great companies like, Visma. They've got a big holding in Visma. At some stage, Visma's going to IPO.
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code TWINPEETS. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free, and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe today using the TWINPEETS promo code, and you can save up to £69. Visit sharescope.co.uk for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
And, they have got a great track record of realizing these companies, but, making a lot of money, quite honestly. So I'm holding it. It's gone out to a big discount. If somebody would, take a look at it, do your
I think it's
research,
on a
but
35% discount according to Sharescope.
huge, huge, huge.
No,
Yeah.
31%, sorry, not 35%,
Yeah,
but
it's gone
still.
out at a big discount, but I'm holding it. I'm not losing the faith at the moment. I just think this whole software as a service, great. I'm big, it great interest in AI, et cetera, et cetera. But, is it really going to take over all those
I
companies?
think a lot
I
of
just
companies are
not.
going to
No.
regret leaning so heavily on AI because it just doesn't work the way that people think it does. There's a lot of hype around it. There's a lot of excitement around it. But when you actually come to the practicalities of trying to replace the people, it's actually a lot more complicated than people realize. And it's often, I'm not saying in every instance, but it's often not quite what it was labeled as on the tin. And I think now that you've got firms, I was reading an interesting thing today. Now that you've got so many firms so desperate to plug AI into everything, actually, you're hugely exposed to companies like Anthropic or OpenAI
OpenAI,
suddenly
yeah.
cranking up the fees. At the moment, it's sort of $20 a seat a month to use OpenAI. Well, what would you do if all of a sudden you've replaced all your staff and they said it was $2,000 a month? Suddenly a lot less, affordable, isn't it? But
It
that's
definitely
just me.
is, Henry. I mean, obviously, we've got investment trusts that invest in Anthropic too, and I've got Scottish Mortgage, which has got quite, a reasonable holding in, I think it's got 1% holding in Anthropic, but also in these similar unquoted companies, SpaceX, ByteDance, Stripe, Revolut, Anthropic. But I think you're right. I mean, I think it's ridiculous that, HG's valuation is being punished quite as much as it has. We'll
It's
wait and
sheer panic.
see.
People don't know how to value this and they don't know
No.
what's in it. So they've just sold it. So that it's a bit like me with the renewables. I'm not sure what I don't know. So I'll just put it in the too difficult pile.
We're all worried about an AI bust one minute. We're more worried about that. It was going to come along. It was always, and then suddenly it was like, oh no, it's going to take over the world again. I mean, I don't know, but I'm holding my HG. I mean, I've obviously got a Scottish mortgage, which I spoke about then, and I love that for my exposure to unlisted. You can actually hold a little bit over 30% in unlisteds now. But also, I've got companies like oh, I tell you what is a new buy for me, Templeton Emerging Markets.
Oh, yes, very
It's a
good.
new buy, and I have to say, I'm very happy with it. It is flying.
Yeah,
Flying.
they are a very, very good emerging markets manager, Templeton.
They are extremely good. I
It's
had
got a 5 star
another.
morning rating from, if I've got the fund right. I think the ticker's TEM.
I had another emerging markets trust, which will remain nameless, that I've sold, and I've gone with Templeton Emerging Markets. I'm very, very happy with them. Obviously, the UK, I'm still committed to the UK companies like Mercantile, investing in mid caps and smaller companies. I'm still very, very positive about smaller companies, despite the fact that, they were absolutely flying along, and then suddenly the conflict, what a shame. But, I've still got my smaller companies exposure, and I'm sure that will come through. Which actually brings me to a panel I'm doing very shortly.
Ooh.
And we are
Interesting.
all going to be there because we're all going to be at the Master Investor Show on the 25th of April, aren't we?
We will be
Absolutely,
there.
Arendelle. We're looking forward to your panel as well, as
We'll be
doing
on the
our own.
front row
And
with
what's your
little
panel on,
floats.
Peter?
Say again, sorry.
What's your panel on?
Well, I was as a live podcast that Henry and I will be doing.
Oh,
The
wow.
audience will be our panel, but that's the only clue I'm going to give you so far, Annabelle.
Oh,
So
really?
tell us a Yeah, so tell us
Well,
about yours
mine is less
and your hosts.
secret. Mine's less secret, I'll be honest. I'm doing a Why Small is Beautiful Again. You can tell I put together this title before the conflict.
Lovely, lovely.
I've got some great managers. I've got the wonderful Richard Stovely, who's the manager
Brilliant.
of Rockwood Strategic.
Rockwood. Yep.
I've got Hetan Patel, who's the manager of JP Morgan UK Small Cap Growth and Income. And I've got Nish Patel, who's the manager of the Global Smaller Companies Trust. So I've got two UK Smaller Companies managers and a global smaller companies manager.
Global.
They've all got very different styles and strategies. The Global Smaller Companies Trust, I've got to be honest, it's a dividend hero. And it has got over 50 years, I'm pretty sure, of dividend increases, she says as she checks her list.
Wow.
Yes, it's got 55 years of dividend
55.
increases,
That's
actually.
one, I've not looked at properly at all, and it's got 55 years. I'm a bit ashamed that I've not
You're
looked at
going to
that
have to
properly,
come along to
Annabelle.
my panel, Peter.
I'll have a think about that. I think we might have enough to do that day, but I'll have a chat. I'll have a
But
think
also, since
about it.
I've got that one, I've got the JP Morgan Trust, which pays a 4% yield out of, but that's from its NAV. So it's distributing capital as income. Now, some people love it, some people don't, but that's what it does. So that's a very different approach again. And then I've got Richard Stavely, and he is a sort of more activist also. I always think he's like a private equity approach to listed companies. He is getting involved, making strategic decisions, sitting on boards of companies. So I think it's going to be a really interesting panel.
No, that'll be absolutely brilliant. And I think you'll have a fantastic audience for that as well. They'll be wanting to listen to those fund managers. And as you said earlier, it's about getting that accessibility. So, 3,500, 4,000, 4,500 people attending the Master Investor Show, the UK's biggest investor show, being able to listen, hear, and also speak with and directly have a conversation with you and those three fund managers will be absolutely amazing. It'll be an
And I've
absolutely
got to
fantastic
say to
day.
you, Peter, this is new because our members have attended Master Investor before, but the AIC have not attended Master Investor. Clearly we're a trade association. We've got limited budget
Absolutely.
to this kind of thing. But this year we've made the decision that we really need to be there.
Absolutely. And we'll be looking forward to having you there. Now, Annabelle, I'm going to take a tiny little break here. I've got to plug someone's doing the London Marathon. I'm going to come back. I've got something to ask you about. Brace yourself. I'm going to ask you about SpaceX valuations and the companies that could give exposure about that. So I'm just preparing you for that. We've got a lovely chap who supported Henry and I on various different fundraisers and charity fundraisers in the past. It's called Simon Higton. And he's doing the London Marathon at the end of this month. And he's running for charity. And it's called the Sky High Foundation, who work with families whose children or members of their families have passed away due to meningitis. So he's doing that fantastic marathon run on the at the end of the month. So if you can please go and pay a visit to his Just Giving page, which is at enthuse marathon londonmarathon.enthuse.com for the Sky High Foundation. You can find Simon Higton on there. I'll be putting a post out probably tomorrow with regards to that as well. And if you can make a donation to the Sky High Foundation under Simon Higton, it'll be very, very much appreciated. He's going to raise some monies to support that particular charity, and we'll plug it again another time as well. So Annabelle, a couple of final questions. I'm conscious of the time because Henry's going to go out as usual on social on the night of our recordings. Want to talk all things SpaceX now, if we may. A couple
Oh,
of
it's
companies have got
exciting,
exposure to
isn't
a couple of companies got exposure to it. I've been a bit negative about the rising ever rising valuation of SpaceX,
I think
but I
you
wanted
with
to focus
everyone
not
in
on
the.
that side of it, just the companies
I
that are
can
exposed to
understand that. I
SpaceX.
can
And
understand that, Peter. That valuation just keeps going the skywards.
but let's focus on the companies that got exposure to it and how they might be able to get
Sure.
exposure to SpaceX, please. So people can
Okay, so
investigate
yeah,
that for
continue about
themselves.
SpaceX. I mean, yeah, we've looked at this. I mean, obviously Edinburgh Worldwide.
Yep.
I have to
And
say
Sava.
my information on this was is at the beginning of March, what
Okay.
percentage is of their portfolio? Probably
Okay.
with the revaluation of SpaceX, it's going to be a higher percentage of their portfolio
Absolutely.
now. So I happen to know that Edinburgh Worldwide, I think now is a fifth of their portfolio.
Okay.
Scottish Mortgage, and this is at the beginning of March, it would have gone up. It was 15% of their portfolio, and that is a very big company to have 15%,
Absolutely, yep. Yep.
Schiehallion Fund, 13.6
Yep.
percent. Baillie Gifford US Growth, 11.8%. Now, those are the ones with really chunky exposure, and they're all Baillie Gifford managed investment trusts.
Yeah.
Then, if we look at RIT Capital Partners, it's got 2.7% exposure. Monks Investment Trust, 1.1%. I've got to say, I've got Monks Investment Trust.
Okay, so you've got exposure to that one as well. Yeah.
Harbourvest Global Private Equity has got 0.6, and Pantheon just teeny tiny 0.1, teeny tiny.
Yeah.
If you do want to get exposure, obviously one of these investment trusts is the right way to go about it. And I mean, I have to say, I use Starlink for my internet in deepest, darkest Oxfordshire.
You really?
Okay. I do, because there aren't very many other options, Peter, in deepest, darkest
Wow,
Oxfordshire.
I
Really,
didn't
there
know that.
isn't. So, trying to get BT out is always fun and games. Then, when they do come out, they say, "We're going to put a post in your neighbour's garden." And not surprising, the neighbour's not very happy about that.
Is that the answer? Oh gosh. Hello, neighbor.
This has actually happened.
Oh, comedy gold.
So I've ended up Starling. It says very good. Very good.
Fantastic. Now you mentioned Harbour Vest. I must touch on this because I'm not sure
Yeah,
it was
not
today or
going
the day
on there,
before.
isn't there?
The tender offer going on as well there.
It's huge. They've got a whole package of shareholder initiatives. 400 million tender offer,
Yep.
buybacks. They're putting in place a continuation vote, a
Yes.
huge amount of activity going on. They want to, and it's had a big impact already. The share price was up,
So
I think it was
share
up.
price already taken off. Plans
Share
to
price
return
taken
1 billion
off.
in 3 years. That's a
Yeah,
lot of a
yeah.
big return.
Yeah, I mean,
Wow.
clearly they're keen, but it's a great board. Chairs Ed Warner, who's extremely good. He used to be in charge of the Athletics Association organisation in the UK, interestingly. He writes quite often for the
Okay.
Times.
Okay.
A very good chair. And clearly, talking to shareholders, they want return. And
Yeah, they're
it's been
doing a
sitting
nice.
on a big discount. And they're hoping that these initiatives will help narrow that discount.
Absolutely. So this is a big question from where we started this conversation. You've got
Yeah.
Harbourvest doing almost contradictory now, almost too much, whereas before you had some companies that were doing too little. Is it possible that Harbourvest are doing too little or too much at the same time?
Well, I think if you've seen that share price, I don't think I
The
would
share price is
say
happy. Everyone's rejoicing.
everyone's happy. The shareholders are happy. They would. This is about shareholder engagement. I am
Absolutely.
convinced that board
That's
have been
brilliant.
out talking to
Brilliant.
their shareholders. This is what they want. You've seen a bounce in the share price because not only do those
Yeah.
shareholders want it, but everybody else does too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No. Kudos to them for taking such a proactive stance and everything. So yeah, moving forward, they're going to do really well. I think the shareholders over the course of the week will start reading more and more about it, and articles
Yeah,
from yourself and
we all
Gavin
know
Lumsden and others.
companies
Yeah.
had quite a tough time. It's been quite
Yes.
a tough time. Rates going up. Now it was looking quite good. Now we've got the conflict that slowed everything down, slowed down the IPO market. So they're working hard for their shareholders, and I think that's positive.
Absolutely agree. Absolutely agree. Right, Annabelle, we've done our hour or so. I'm going to give my youthful co-host Henry the chance to ask you one final question, other than unless he doesn't want to, and just wanted to praise you for a fantastic guest appearance once more. Henry, what would you like to say to our award-winning guest, Annabelle
The
Brodie-Smith?
award-winning Annabelle. It was just a quick one from me, actually. Considering all the work you're doing around investment trusts and to raise awareness of investment trusts, what is one key misconception you think people have about investment trusts that you'd like to dispel as a final message to our audience today?
Great
People
question.
think you need a lot of money to invest in them. Generally, people think you need a lot of money to invest in them. You can invest in a platform, £50 a month. It
And
doesn't
just buy
take
a
much.
little bit every month.
Just buy a little bit every month, £50 a month over the last 10 years. Okay, you're drip feeding in. That would be get you over £10,000.
Nice. I like it.
That's really, I'm talking to you also, but next week we've got this government advertising campaign being launched, backed by very many companies and financial services. And the message is that investing is for everyone. And I think, the conception of investment trusts, everybody thinks, oh, it's in the city, it's a bit too complicated. People in suits, no, they are for everyone. And we have over, 25% of investment trust shareholders are ordinary retail investors like you and me who bought through a platform.
I like it. I like it. So there you go, ladies and
Fantastic.
gentlemen. You can go out and put your £50 a month in. Go and pester your brokers now.
Absolutely. And I think importantly, Annabelle, something you said earlier that we must reiterate as well is to for the shareholders and those that have invested in investment trusts, is to speak to the platforms and say, look, I want to have access to my rights to vote. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Please stress to your broker or whatever platform you use, I want to be able to vote on this. What, how do I get to vote on this?
Make sure
Yeah,
you've
for
got
all of
that
them.
box ticked. You might not have ticked the box when you signed up, quite honestly. It might be as simple as that, and then not notifying you about the votes. And then you find your voting, you find your voting box, and there's a whole list of them there that you've missed out on. You need those notifications.
Absolutely. Annabelle, closing words to you. What would you like to share with us? You're going to be at the Master Investor Show on the 25th with
I'm
us.
going to be at Master Investor
Other things.
Show. Anything you want, anything investment trust, check out our website, theaic.co.uk. Wealth of information and data there, daily data, and sign up to my newsletter, Compass. Monthly newsletter, great fun, tells me what I'm up to, and lots of trust news in there too.
Yeah, it's a fantastic, fantastic newsletter, Compass. We'll look forward to sharing that with other people as well. I think what we'll do, Annabelle, on your behalf, ongoing on this podcast, is regularly have a slot where we talk about one investment trust per podcast. Yeah.
I like that idea.
We'll do that for you.
I like that idea, Peter. I think that's a wonderful idea. There's lots of opportunities. We haven't even talked discount. Average
I know.
discount 11% at the moment. Still double digit discounts, but they're coming a lot on the equity sectors. Coming
They
a
have.
lot.
Yeah. We'll have to have you back again for a third podcast. That's what we'll have to do. And make sure that Henry's not going out on that evening so we can have a good hour and a half with you.
It's been a
Okie
pleasure
dokie.
to be here. Thank you so much.
Absolute delight to
Peter,
have you
it's a
on
pleasure to
again.
be here.
Brilliant. Ladies and gents, that was the wonderful, amazing, fantastic, super intelligent, super smart Annabelle Brodie Smith, the award-winning communications director of the Association of Investment Companies. That's the end of this podcast 177. We'll see you in 2 weeks. And for those of you that want and need and wish to see Annabelle, and us, of course, you can get us at the Master Investor Show a week on Saturday, which is the 25th of April. We'll love to see you there. Until then, take care, God bless, invest wisely, and choose to invest in some investment companies. Over and out.
Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.